Adodo.
Hello, good afternoon and welcome to the Midday News. The news is live on Joy 99.7 and Hits 103.9 FM here in Accra. We are on Love 99.5 FM in Kumasi, myjoyonline.com, and affiliating all 16 regions of Ghana, including Jata FM Karaga, Jatpa FM Bwipe, A1 Radio Bogatanga, Sky FM Sunyai, Space FM Takwa, and Radio Wa in Wa. We are also live on X Spaces, Facebook, and YouTube. The Midday News is supported by Petrosol Platinum Energy, Energizing Dreams. Our top stories: demand for Special Prosecutor Kisiye Jaben to immediately step aside, as one of the petitioners for his removal alleges misappropriation and financial mismanagement at the office. We have details. Also, Majority Leader Mahama Yar'Adua calls for Sraj full investigation of institutions who top annual corruption perception index to deal with the menace, especially in public institutions.
If we really want to be changing institutions, when you make that finding, you should report to Sraj that there's a perception that this institution is corrupt. So can you go into their systems and find out what practices enable corruption and then make recommendations?
We have details as Sraj announces move to conduct corruption risk assessment on the Lands Commission and Rules Ministry believed to be institutions of high-level corruption. Also coming up, after nearly seven decades of violence, tension and uncertainty, a long and bitter chapter in Boko's history may finally be drawing to a close as the two principal sides in the conflict, the Kusasis and the Mamprusis, begin a symbolic and substantive step towards healing as they come together to smoke the peace pipe and commit to a future of coexistence. We'll hear from the two sides plus a conflict resolution expert on what the future holds for them. Also, Accra High Court orders parties to file the terms of a plea bargain 3 days before the next sitting in Nana Agrada's case. Details Agrada's lawyers maintain she is in a stable condition. These and more with me, Pearl Ofori. This is Joy News, independent, fearless and credible. Now, one of the petitioners seeking the removal of Special Prosecutor Kisiye Jaben is demanding that he immediately steps aside to allow for a forensic audit of his management of the office. The Coalition for Integrity in Governance alleges misappropriation and financial mismanagement, among other issues, in its petition to the president. Joining me in the studio is Isaac Kofi Ejeyi with details of this petition, a copy of which we have obtained. Kofi, what are the details of this petition?
Well, so it is a petition dated the 20th of October 2025, and it sought to, ask for about five things based on six count that is actually in the petition. So I'm going to walk you through all the reasons given by the petitioner. First one has to do with misappropriation and financial mismanagement. Quote, it says that since assuming office in August 2021, the special prosecutor has received substantial budgetary allocations, yet there has not been any public record of audited financial report detailing the application of these funds in contravention of Article 187, 7 and B of the Constitution of the Republic of Ghana. It says that given the magnitude of public resources, expended, it is imperative that a comprehensive forensic audit be conducted to establish accountability and transparency. Mm-hmm. There's another count on incompetence and lack of tangible results. It says, quote, despite enjoying strong statutory powers and substantial funding, the Office of the Special Prosecutor has failed to achieve meaningful outcomes in the national fight against corruption. It goes ahead to say that there have been no major convictions, asset recoveries, or significant, deterrent measures, reflecting a lack of operational focus and leadership efficiencies. On the tangent of misbehavior and insubordination, the petitioner went ahead to say that, quote, it has been publicly reported that the special prosecutor withheld investigation dockets from the Attorney General's office for several months, compelling the Attorney General to publicly complain about the delays in the extradition of Honorable Kenneth Oforiatta. Such conduct, according to the petitioner, constitutes gross misbehavior and insubordination, violating Article 41F of the Constitution. On the count of abuse of constitutional powers and institutional conflicts. It went ahead to say that, quote, the special prosecutor has increasingly exercised what can be described as bully judicial constitutional custodial powers, which they go ahead to say that BJCCP, and encroaching on the constitutional functions of the Attorney General under Article 88. This unhealthy power struggle has generated confusion within the judicial system of the Republic of Ghana. And on the tangent of misbehavior, mismanagement of public funds and lack of transparency, it went ahead to list a number or the budgetary allocations for the Office of the Special Prosecutor since 2021. And the amount quoted here between 2021 and 2024 is about 364 million Ghana cedis, which they want, some form of audit to be conducted.
Okay. Thank you very much, Isaac Kofi Ajayi, for that update. Let's bring you other stories now. And the majority leader and chairman of the Independent Constitutional Bodies of Parliament, Mahama Yar'Adua, has called for full-scale investigations into institutions who top the annual corruption index. The annual index, done by Transparency International, ranks institutions citizens believed to be corrupt or involved in some level of corruption-related activities nationwide. Appearing before the Independent Constitutional Bodies of Parliament to justify the budget allocation for the Commission of the Commission on Human Rights and Administrative Justice, Joseph Wattel, he indicated that the Commission has begun investigations into the report on the perceived corruption in the state institutions.
In 2022, beyond the Transparency International CPI, we conducted jointly with the Ghana Statistical Service what we call actual experience of corruption in the public service. That report is online on our website. Anyone can go for it. Where we actually looked at not only perception, but Ghanaians or citizens' experience of how they got, how they participated somehow in the issue of corruption, either by giving bribes or being demanded of bribes, and even of other things in kind, such as sextortion, among others. So that report is there. It is now left with policymakers to see how they can take that, determine what should be done. Because if you look at that very carefully, corruption is not of an institution, it is of public offices. So we can only investigate and make recommendations or decisions out of specific allegations against specific public officers who we have made findings against, but not the institution.
You had Joseph Wattel there, but chairman of the committee, Mahama Yar'Adua, believes the investigations must be escalated into possible prosecutions of individuals.
But there must be something triggering the perception. And so if we really want to be changing institutions, when you make that finding, you should report to Shraj that there's a perception that this institution is corrupt. So can you go into their systems and find out what practices enable corruption, and then make recommendations, let's say, to the Independent Constitutional Bodies Committee, that these practices of these institutions enable corruption, and therefore you recommend that A, B, C, D should change. These regulations should be enacted to make it more difficult for corruption to happen. He's my senior at the bar, and he knows about what the Indians did. Episcopal jurisdiction, where even when there's no complaint, they will take up the matter. You get the situation. So even though our constitution says that to investigate complaints, every clause to activate the mandate is always triggered by, complaints. So can we advance our constitutional architecture by rethinking the concept of complaining? I get the situation. So that when you make all these findings in your annual surveys, it should trigger a complaint to Shraj. Shraj should go into the practice of those institutions that the citizens say are corrupt.
Well, join me right now for more on this is my colleague James Avegi. So, James, the commission says it is putting special focus on the Lands Commission and also the Roads Ministry. Why?
Well, Pell, according to the commissioner of Shraj, those two institutions have come up as far as the corruption conversations are concerned. You know that in public discussions, there have been allegations every now and then, especially against the Lands Commission bribery allegations, when people apply for land documents and all of that. And at the Ministry of Roads and Highways, there's been conversations about how road contracts are awarded, bidding and awarding of contracts, which some have alleged that you have to pay some amount of money to win some of these contracts. And so based on that, the commission said they'll be conducting what they call corruption risk assessment of those two key institutions to know what exactly has been going on in there. But especially on the issue about the investigation of institutions involved in corruption, leading the charge in corruption perception index, the committee has agreed that the laws backing strike must be amended to give them that, to trigger that automatic investigations, not someone going to report to them. And so currently they are on a break. We expect two more institutions, the National Media Commission as well as the District Assembly Common Fund, to also appear to justify the budget allocation for 2026 bill.
James Savage, thank you. Now, it's been nearly 7 decades of tension, uncertainty and bloodshed in the upper east town of Boku. But today there is renewed hope for lasting peace as the Kusasis and Mamprusis come together to take a significant step towards healing and reconciliation. This afternoon, we'll hear from both sides on their plans to rebuild a community battered by decades of conflict. A conflict that forced the closure of schools and clinics, disrupted families and drove businesses away from the town. Well, the breakthrough follows a peace deal reached through the mediation of the Asantehene Otumfo Osaitu II at the Minshia Palace yesterday. Now, what does this moment truly mean to the people of Boku? Can this fragile peace endure after years of failed attempts by successive government and institutions to resolve the crisis? First, here's a report by my colleague Emmanuel Bright-Kweku, who witnessed the conclusion of the talks at the Minshia Palace.
It appears conclusions with the mediation talks with Asantehene has finally come to an end. We do not really know what happened in the closed door meeting, but this is the jubilation that we are having here at the Minshia Palace. And as you can see, that is the dignitary or some local authorities here. We understand this is the group for the Kusasis. And right after the mediation talks, there have been wild jubilations here at the Minshia Palace. They had waited all day long for the Asantehene to conclude the mediation talks between the Mamprusis and Kusasis. And we know that this conflict has been a long-standing chieftaincy feud between the two factions, and that have resulted in the loss of lives and destruction to property. And we understand that once this is done, the report or the outcome of the Asantehene's mediation talks will be forwarded to the presidency to really give us the outcome of the peace talks between the two factions, that's the Mamprusi and Kusasis.
Well, the National Peace Council has expressed gratitude to the Asantehene for leading the mediation process and is urging both factions to lay down their arms and embrace lasting peace. Kwesi Jirenchi Boatin is a senior public relations officer at the National Peace Council.
For us at the National Peace Council, we are grateful to Asantehene's efforts in mediating and the work done so far. For us, the effort we'll be making to ensure compliance is to it's more of encouraging and then continue advocacy on the grounds and then with the youth and then various peoples. Those with arms should silence the gun, and collectively, let's all work together to seek peaceful means of resolving the conflict in Boku. Mm. So this is for us what the council is proposing, and of course, we are working, awaiting the recommendation that Otumfo's mediation effort will bring.
Well, indeed, yesterday's peace deal did not come easily. For decades, various government and stakeholders committed significant resources and political capital in unsuccessful attempts to end the conflict. Ethnic mistrust, political interference, and unresolved chieftaincy disputes sustained a cycle of violence that proved stubbornly resistant to resolution. Now, here is a brief background on how the conflict began and why it has persisted for so long. We apologize for the sound. Let's take the right one now. We do not have that inset. We'll bring you that one later in our bulletin. Shortly on the story, we're joined by Professor Kwesi Enin. But before that, let's take you to the Upper East region, rather, and speak to our correspondent, Albert Sori, who's been monitoring developments there. Albert, good afternoon. Thank you for your time here on the Midday News. Now, how is Boko responding to this peace deal?
Yes, Phil. So ahead of the announcement, as far as the mediation talks are concerned, many people had anticipated that depending on what was going to be announced, there could be some disturbances. And so the security started taking measures. Various security posts were erected on roads leading into Boko, just in case there were going to be any sort of disturbances in the town, depending on how the announcement would have gone. But since that announcement was not publicly made, but rather that it was going to be submitted to the president, we haven't witnessed any disturbances. Many of the residents were afraid that there could be shootings or what have you happened. It's been relatively quiet in the town. There were no shootings or disturbances whatsoever, and that has continued today. What we know also is that the leaders from both factions are still in Kumasi. They have not yet arrived home, and so their people are waiting to hear from them when they finally return.
And Albert, what is the security situation in that area at the moment?
Security has always been on the ground very strongly. As I said earlier, a lot of security measures were also taken to beef up what is already on the ground in anticipation of what people thought was going to be a public announcement of the outcome of the mediation. And so security is on the ground. But as I said, there hasn't been any sort of disturbance since the outcome of yesterday's talk. So everything is calm at the moment.
Albert Sori, thank you so much for bringing us up to speed what was happening there. Now, joining us right now on the subject is Professor Kwesi Enin. He's a security analyst. Good afternoon. Thank you for your time here on the Midday News. This must be good news, isn't it? Professor Enin, can you hear me? Professor Kwesi Enin? Please, can you hear me? Well, we'll try and reach Professor Kwesi Enin to share his insights with us on the story. But right now, let's move to other stories. And this is the Midday News. And you're welcome back to the Midday News. Thanks for staying with us. Let's go to the court now. And the Accra High Court has directed parties in the ongoing case involving Patricia Isiedua, also known as Nana Agrada, and her co-accused to submit the full details of a proposed plea bargain before the next adjourned date. The court instructed that the terms of the agreement be filed no later than 3 clear days before the next sitting on December 16 this year. At today's hearing, prosecutors signaled their intention to request a bench warrant for the second accused, citing his absence. Now, defense lawyers, however, clarified that they had not received a hearing notice, prompting the court to order proper service before the next appearance. Now, Fatal Bayaga was in court for us, and he joins me in the studio. Fatal, give us a background to this case.
Pell, the matter stems from accusations that Nana Agrada, once a fetish priestess and now an evangelist, broadcast intimate videos of Pastor Emmanuel Appiah, popularly known as Osafu Appiah, on her television station across social media without his consent. Now, Pell, prosecutors say the images were aired during a live program where panelists allegedly ridiculed the pastor, an act they argue violates the Cybersecurity Act 2020, Act 1038, which criminalizes a non-consensual distribution of intimate content. So, Pell, despite currently serving a 15-year prison sentence in a different case involving defrauding by false pretense, Agrada was transported to the court for this matter.
And what was her demeanor? How did she look?
Pell, Nana Agrada appeared calm and composed throughout the proceedings. However, her physical appearance showed a shocking transformation. She appeared darker in complexion and leaner than before, a change that was a bit striking, Pell.
Thank you very much, Fatel Bayaga. Now let's take you to the northern region, where a farmer, Mohammed Enchela, has made history by successfully cultivating cocoa in Sauna Yili, a small village in the Nanumba North Municipality. This is a significant milestone, as cocoa was previously thought to only thrive in Ghana's southern sector. The people of Sauna Yili are celebrating this achievement, which could potentially change the agricultural landscape of the region. Journalist Martina Bugri reports from the community.
Meet Mohammed Enchela, the cocoa farmer, a man with contagious enthusiasm. Mohammed has spent years working on a cocoa farm in the western region, learning the intricacies of cultivating the prized golden bean. Convinced that Sauna Yili's climate and soil were perfect for cocoa production, he decided to introduce the crop when he returned to his hometown in 2012.
I got the seeds and nurtured them, just like I'm doing now. I cycled all the way to Nkwanta to get the seeds. Most people were skeptical about growing cocoa in the northern region, but I was convinced it would work. After nursing the seeds for 5 months and transplanting them, I saw how healthy they were growing, and I knew it was going to be a success. And look, it's paying off.
He's not just farming cocoa. We have plantain, palm nut, ginger, among other crops here in the northern region.
Now back to Accra, the Ghana Federation and Disability Organizations. Pardon me, this is the Midday News. We'll take a short break here and return with the story. Now, welcome back. Let's bring you that story. The Ghana Federation of Disability Organizations is calling for stronger laws to protect persons with disabilities, saying current legislation has not kept pace with global standards. They warn that barriers to education, healthcare, employment, and public facilities continue to persist. Rodalyn Abensa reports.
At a press conference in Accra, National Gender Representative Mata Kofi called for urgent reenactment to the Persons with Disability Act 2006, saying the nearly two-decade-old law is outdated and fails to protect the rights of persons living with disability.
To take immediate action towards the reenactment and passage of the revised Persons with Disability Act 2006, Act 715. Legislative action on the renewed or revised act has been slow, leaving millions of Ghanaians with disabilities without an updated legal framework that reflects their rights, dignity, and aspirations.
The Federation insists revising the act is crucial to ensure equal opportunities, stronger protection, and compliance with international standards. Rodelina Benz's report read to you.
Now, the medical drone service Zipline is defending its over 500,000 monthly contract with the government, signed in 2018, insisting that its operations provide critical and essential medical services. Country Director for Zipline, Daniel Kwekumerki, says the drones have been delivering life-saving medical supplies efficiently across the country. His comments come after the Health Minister, Kwabena Minta-Akande, raised concerns at the government accountability series yesterday, where he noted that the 2018 contract requires $88,000 per month per center for 6 centers, totaling about $520,000 monthly. He said audit findings indicate that only 12% of the areas served qualify as hard to reach, and only 4% of deliveries are classified as emergencies, raising value for money concerns. The minister also said that the drones had been delivering non-critical items such as condoms, exercise books, and school uniforms. While the country manager of Zipline, Daniel Kwekumerki, responded and insists that the deliveries of non-medical items are extremely rare. Only 1 in 20,000 flights delivered condoms, and that such requests usually come from agencies under the Ministry of Health.
Their services was to concentrate on the hard-to-reach areas and emergency services. But upon review of the activities, what we have realized is that the hard-to-reach areas constitute only 12% of the activities.
Critical life-saving commodities, which we have done, we have saved like lives in the tune of 10,000. And then there's emergencies averted. There's so many different nuances to this. Very critical deliveries. There is a list that we have with the Ministry of Health of products that we are delivering.
Okay.
And then there is a lot of other nuances that come into play. Again, supply continuously comes from the agency.